Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I'm DM.
And tonight, an action-packed Statham extravaganza, co-starring The Rock.
I guess? I don't know if it's fair to put one above the other.
No, it's not. I actually didn't check what order their names came in at the start of the movie. I assume The Rock was first, but I don't know for sure.
I don't know. How do you... If it's not alphabetical, how do you then make a choice?
It's tough. Although, I guess, you would do it alphabetically because The Rock wins alphabetically in all areas, first name, last name, and nickname.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't know if Jason Statham doesn't
have a nickname.
Well, no, but I'm just saying his nickname, if you just called him The Rock, that still comes before Statham.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Although I guess The comes after Jason. Hmm. Anyway, the point is, it's a movie starring two of the biggest action heroes there is, action stars there are of today. So that should be fun. But first, we have some random crap to deal with.
Yes, first a little bit of housekeeping. So it turns out we're both dumb. It's not just me.
Okay.
Terry Gilliam is American.
Oh, of course he is. He's the token American. All right, that's an embarrassing thing to have forgotten.
So I want to thank All Points Bulletin for
noticing that
pointing that out to me.
That slipped
along with
right
by us. Some of the things I'm not going to repeat.
So there was another whole bunch of corrections that were just for you that you're going to leave out. Okay.
Well, mostly criticisms of you, so I'm just going to keep that for myself.
Nice. Well, we know we can't trust his opinion. But anyway, when you're professionally wrong about Jason on the internet.
Oh, that's not what this is about.
No, I know. I'm just saying you can't trust someone's opinion who's professionally wrong about Jason on the internet. But anyway, let's move on to music, which is, with all of these song-themed musical biopics coming out, I read an article recently that made me think that they have to do one about Smash Mouth.
Why?
Because in this article, in this long interview with all of the members and people who worked with them, it was a history of the song All Star, which is what you would call the movie. And what I loved about it is the story lacks the scene that is in every music biopic where it's like nobody believes in them, right? And they have faith in themselves and they become huge stars. Instead, the story has the captivating inverse of that, which is they get finished recording the song and like their producer comes to the guy who wrote the song and is like, look, this song is too good. I don't know if we actually want to release it.
What?
Because
he's like, doesn't make any sense.
No. And what he says is, you have to understand, this is going to be a number one hit. You are going to make a ton of money and you guys will be able to tour for the rest of your lives off this song. But as a corollary, for the entire rest of your life, you are only going to be associated with this song. And you are going to hear it every day for the rest of your life. And I want you to think long and hard about that before you release this song.
Uh-huh.
And the thing is, the guy's like, and we released the song, because of course we did. How could we say no? And yes,
sure.
There has been a curse element to it, because he was completely right. I have never gone a day for the last 20 years without hearing that song.
Yeah, but meanwhile, Smash Mouth is laughing all the way to the bank. So.
Oh, he is. He's happily rich. But there is like this up and down side of it. It's like, it's a thing you can never escape because it's like, you'll never overcome that one success. You're never going to do better than All Star.
I see the Key and Peele sketch about Hootie and the Blowfish.
Oh, God.
And they keep calling him Hootie.
Yes.
Where are the Blowfish?
It's so good. But yeah, like a biopic about Smash Mouth. I think there's something there. All right, next up, I believe you watched a movie?
I did. I watched The Villainess.
Which one is that?
So this is a Korean film. It's been on Netflix for a while.
Right, yes, that's what it's for.
And it's good, but it's way too long.
Oh, no.
And wears all of its influences on its sleeve.
Such as?
So it's like La Femme Nikita, The Vengeance Trilogy, Kill Bill, Gunslinger Girls, like.
Just everything you've already seen.
Yeah. So it's not bad, but it's, I want to recommend it, but bear in mind, it's really long.
Oh, okay. And when you're talking, you're like 2.5 hours?
I don't even know.
But okay. Long enough that you noticed it.
Yeah, you notice how long the movie is.
Okay, gotcha. All right, yeah. So the villainess, it's cool, and is the action at least really good?
Yeah, of course, the action's great.
Just making sure. You could never tell, but you wouldn't be recommending if it wasn't, so I probably didn't have to ask.
Well, it's a Korean movie. They're not fucking around. So.
Well, I'm sure they are, but those ones don't make it to North America.
Or we just don't watch them.
That's possible, too. All right, next up we have a list.
Of course we have a list. So this week's list was a bit of a tall order. I'm not going to lie.
Okay.
So the title of the list is the Top 25 Action Movie Teams.
Oh.
And it so comes like, to us from
like
mandatory.
48 Hours or Tango and Cash.
Well, that's what I was hoping to get. Okay. But those lists don't exist, where it's just like a team up, which is two dudes.
Yeah.
So these are like, this is more of an ensemble.
Oh, okay.
Action team list.
Oh, that's weird. But
that's why I was having a hard time finding a team up list, because that's what I Googled and it came up with like action teams.
Okay.
So the duo does team up doesn't exist. So somebody out there on the internet needs to make that list so that we can criticize it.
Yeah, there's so many, and that's a crazy thing not to have a list of. There's so many movies where two dudes do action together. And it's like, you can even expand it out. Like, Terminator 2 is a buddy action flick about Linda Hamilton and Arnold Schwarzenegger doing action together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a buddy action, a mismatched buddy action flick too. Like, how do you not
already? It's a bit of a stretch, but.
Only a bit. They both have a significant amount of action set pieces in the film. It's not like Terminator 1, where she's just being run away, dragged around by Kyle Reese who's trying to save her. And right at the end of the movie, she finds her strength after he's dead.
Yeah, but suggesting that it's just a buddy action movie sort of minimizes Connor's role.
It is much more than that too, but it is at its core, like there is a lot of just the two of them having awesome action adventures. It's a bit of a stretch compared to, say, describing Rush Hour 1-3 that way, but at the same time, I think it broadly fits in. But all right, hit me with is the list making any authorial decisions or is it just a list?
I don't know because it's counting down from 25.
Oh, okay. But it's not by year furthest back to present.
No, not that I can tell.
Okay, so maybe they're actually meaning something this time.
Maybe? I don't know.
Unless it's alphabetical.
It is not alphabetical.
Okay, well, then by counting down from 25, you were making a statement.
All right, so we begin with the Monster Squad.
I mean, barely an action movie. It's just a fun horror comedy. Mm-hmm. Weird way to start your list, dude.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. 24, The Guns of Navarone.
Okay, so as Men on a Mission movies go, like that's up there with Dirty Dozen or my personal favorite Where Eagles Dare. So, yeah, I mean, again, if you're having that on, Magnificent Seven is probably going to show up, but sure.
Okay. Number 23, Ninja Turtles.
Which one?
1990.
Oh, okay, then that's fine. They're both
but, okay,
Ninja Turtles movies.
This is going to come up again and again, so let's just discuss this now.
Please.
They were, like, it's not a team-up. They're already together. They're already
it's
a
true.
Team.
Yeah, so like, something like the Dirty Dozen, it's like 12 guys who don't know each other, but they're all criminals, so they get teamed up to do a job.
Like, this movie is action teams, but I'm specifically interested in the team-up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'll take what I can get, but at the
but
same time,
this is not a good example.
You know, they're brothers, so.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Or they were at least all bought from the same pet store.
No, they're brothers. They consider them each other.
No, I'm just saying original.
Brothers.
Yes, they are brothers in the ninja sense of the word. Ninja clan sense of the word.
Or how about brothers in the they were raised together sense of the word?
Oh, no, that too. Absolutely.
Number 22, Saving Private Ryan.
This is getting very, like, this is already really
interesting.
I don't think
really that can count. Like,
no, that doesn't count at all. It's just a war movie.
It's just, and like, yeah,
the
you're up together in this.
It's about a squad
this,
of guys.
Because, but... yeah, exactly. You're a squad. It's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next up, Platoon. No. What do you think this list is for?
21, Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol.
Aww. Like, when was this list made?
I don't know, actually.
Yeah, because, again, if this was made in a world where the movies Rogue Nation or Fallout exist, that has
well,
no
obviously
excuse
not
being
Fallout.
List.
This list yeah. predates Fallout.
Okay. But, like, even if Rogue Nation was out by this point, you have no excuse.
Well, no, because I think in this, for Ghost Protocol, there is a team-up element because Jeremy Renner joins the team.
Very briefly, yes.
And Simon Pegg, he's now in the field.
That's true. So there is a bit of a team-up aspect to it. I can see
yes.
that.
Yes. Yeah. Number 20, Hellboy 2, The Golden Army.
Why choose Hellboy 2 over Hellboy?
Because the author prefers Hellboy 2.
Oh, okay. I guess I don't really need a bigger reason than that, do I?
That's all there is to it.
Okay. I mean, it's an okay movie. For a ripoff of the Fatal Fury anime, it's a pretty good movie.
Mm-hmm. All right, prepare to be really disappointed in number 19.
Yes.
300.
Oh, God.
Yeah. That doesn't count in any
especially
sense.
Especially, it's like, what if none of the characters had any personality or memorable traits?
Also, you can't have a team of 300. It's too big.
No. Well, no, I think they mean the three guys who have names of the team is what they mean. But yeah, no. Again, that's just an army. It's not a team. It's an army.
All right, this but one no, kind of counts. Number 18, the Warriors.
Well, I mean, they're a gang, so that's kind of a team.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit of a reach, though. I agree.
And they stay gold, so. Number 17, the Goonies.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it's an adventure, not an action movie. So it's like
it's an action adventure.
It is.
There's action.
There's a little action, but I do agree with you. Okay. I mean, if we're giving them, well, actually, I didn't give them the Monster Squad. So let's just give them Goonies, and I'll be quiet about Monster Squad.
Okay. Number 16, Fast Five.
Okay. I mean, Fast Five is pretty good. I prefer Furious Six, but that's me.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, Fast Five's a really fun movie. I can't argue with them on that front. Okay, sure. Yeah, Fast Five.
Okay. Number 15. I love that it's mentioned, but I don't think it counts and it doesn't belong on this list. Serenity.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
No, and like you say, they're a pre-existing, like, in a team movie, we really should build a team as part of the movie. Mm-hmm. It's got to be like Ocean's 11, where they, like, building a team is integral to making the movie, whereas these guys are all best friends who've known each other for years.
Yeah.
That doesn't count at all. It's a great movie, but no, that doesn't count at all.
Yeah. Okay, so 14, Aliens.
So apparently you just throw any war movie in here?
Well,
it counts.
I wouldn't call Aliens necessarily a war movie.
Pretty close. They are Marines.
No, they're Marines, but they're not really, it's not really a war movie.
Well, no, it's any special forces mission to take out an alien threat.
Yeah, but I wouldn't call Predator a war movie.
No, that's a horror
movie. So why would you call Aliens a war movie?
Because it's more focused on a specific military action against this known threat, and then they just get overwhelmed. Whereas
Predator
is
a
horror movie
of military people. So
I know, but it's a Predator group of being hunted by a horror movie villain. Like there is no, like Aliens is just yet another commentary on Vietnam about guys not knowing what they're in for. Whereas Predator is a complete reversal where the hunters become the hunted.
Bit of a stretch.
I don't think it's a stretch to say Aliens is a commentary on Vietnam.
I think it definitely is a stretch to say Aliens is a commentary on Vietnam.
Okay.
Yeah. 100% right. It is.
Okay.
Anyone going to war has no idea what they're getting into.
That's not true. Plenty of people go to war knowing exactly what they're getting into.
Bullshit.
Aliens is the story of a people, a group of guys who think just because they're, you know, a bunch of dudes from a futuristic society with high tech, they have nothing to worry about when they get there, and they're overwhelmed by dudes who build tunnels. Like,
and Predator was Delta Force, who thought they were hot shit, and then they get their asses handed to them by an alien.
By a technologically superior force, which is why it doesn't count as a commentary, either a commentary on Vietnam or really a war movie.
Aliens is not a commentary on Vietnam, nor is it a war movie. We're moving on.
Okay.
Number 13, The Expendables.
Well, I mean, he does assemble a team.
He does assemble a team, yes.
So I guess I kind of want to give him that one. Like, yeah, no, they assemble a team. That's fine.
Number 12, X-Men First Class.
Okay, you're getting so ridiculous. Like, I mean, they are a superhero team that gets teamed up in the movie, but it's like that's so far into the superhero genre that it's weird to call it just a team-up movie.
Yeah, like Avengers would be more appropriate.
Oh, way more appropriate. Although that might be number one. We don't know.
I previewed the list. It's not.
Oh, you did. It's not. Okay, sorry.
It's nowhere near this list, actually.
Oh, that's weird. You're right.
Okay, number 11, Predator.
There we go. Team of guys. They go. They get hunted. That's...
But,
I'm just kidding.
But
at this
it's not
point,
a team up though, because they always go on missions together.
Yeah, he is. They are Dutch's mercenary team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. I feel like he's made a different list than we want him to have made, and that's part of our problem. But we're right and he's wrong, so let's keep judging him.
Right, because he's just listing teams, whereas we're specific about the team up.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
what we want. Okay, number 10, Tombstone.
Oh, I love Tombstone. It's weird that I don't think of Tombstone as almost being an action movie at all. Like, there's so little action in that movie.
Westerns are separate for me.
Yeah.
Also because I don't like them. So, just as a general rule.
I really like the movie Tombstone, don't get me wrong. It's just, you know, to call it a team action movie just seems crazy to me.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Number 9. Return of the Jedi.
That's just madness.
That's weird.
Especially since, like, there's barely any teaming up in the movie.
All right, let me read what he's written here. The first three Star Wars movies are all pretty great, but the Rebel Alliance never started acting like a proper team until the third installment, which opens with a well-planned rescue of Han Solo from Jabba's palace, blah-blah-blah.
They all get caught. I don't know that that is a well-planned rescue.
The first Star Wars brought them together, the second forced them apart, but Return of the Jedi finally proved how great Luke, Leia, Han, Chewbacca, R2-D2, and even C-3PO really are when they work together.
Like, literally, he shows up, he gets captured, he kills a Rancor, they murder Jabba, and then he's like, late, I'm leaving you guys for the rest of the movie. And he doesn't meet them again until they have an
Ewok party.
Well,
he's got important stuff to do.
No,
he's got business to take care of elsewhere.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I'm just saying, it's not a team-up movie. By any definition. Luke Skywalker, you're like...
He's following his own path.
That's my point. Like, after he leaves them in the first movie, he spends no real time with the other characters other than that one night inside of a Tauntaun.
Well, I think there's a significant amount of planning that goes into Han's rescue.
Yes, a decent amount of planning did go. That's true.
Yeah.
You're right. But it does happen all off screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just, it seems a little crazy to call this the big team-up movie. It's like, no, Luke Skywalker never teams up with anybody after that first movie. He's pretty much off doing his own thing 99% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the Han rescue, you're absolutely right about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I was wrong. Number 8 is The Avengers.
All right. I'm going to have to give you a remedial critical read course.
All right, Avengers totally belongs in both sense of team.
No, we just talked about it. It's fine.
Yeah. Okay. Number 7, The Magnificent Seven. Oh,
Which
you think
one?
He did that on purpose?
Oh, of course he did that. You think that happened accidentally?
I don't know. It could.
It's an amazing movie. It's about building a team. They do an amazing mission. It's just a wonderful film in every way. I love The Magnificent Seven, unless you're talking about the new one.
I have not.
I didn't. Okay. Also, the TV show is pretty darn good. Ron Perlman was in it.
Oh, all right.
Oh, right.
Number six, Seven Samurai. Come on. You can't have the same movie twice.
No. You really can't. That's super unfair.
I mean, one or the other, dude. Movie. There's no shortage of action team movies. Why did you have to include both Magnificent Seven and Seven Samurai?
Yeah, it's like you're not even going to have Where Eagles Dare on this list or The Dirty Dozen. So come on, guys. Go.
Number five, Fellowship of the Ring. Yeah, I mean,
okay, sure.
Are you going to start saying, oh, it's a fantasy movie?
No, I'm not saying it's a fantasy movie. I'm like, it's fine. That's fine.
Aw, and Bill the Pony's in the picture. Such an integral part of the team.
Wow.
All right, number four, In Your Face, The Dirty Dozen.
Nice. I'm glad it made it onto the list, because that really is a wonderful movie. Such a good action movie, such a great cast. Really, every part of that movie is just incredibly thrilling.
100%. Yeah, I put war movies in a different category because, again, don't really like them that much. So
I agree. Like normally, but it's like based on the list this guy was making, I get putting the Dirty Dozen on there.
I think he just likes war movies.
That too, but it's so integrally like it is literally about building a team to do one job. That's why it feels most like almost most like a team movie of any of these.
Mm-hmm.
Go.
All right, number three. The Incredibles.
But nope. No.
They're family.
They're a family. They're not a team.
Yeah.
Adding Frozone doesn't make them a team. It's just a family and they're one friend.
Yeah. He's not pictured here.
Oh, that's weird. Cause yeah, he does show up at the end of the movie for the big conflict. So I thought they would count that, but no, I guess not.
Number two. Star Trek 4, Voyage Home. What?
What are you talking about?
Really?
No! I mean, yeah, they broke up because they all got other jobs, but, you know, that's not what that movie's about at all.
No, it's about saving the whales.
Yep, and it's badass.
Number one, are you ready for this?
I'm totally ready for this.
Can you guess? Pick a genre. Guess what genre this might be.
Is it finally the heist movie I've wanted to be this whole time?
No.
Oh, okay. Probably, what haven't we done yet? No, it can't be in horror. What am I thinking? No, I got nothing.
The Wild Bunch.
No.
This guy really likes westerns.
He loves westerns, and no, that is not a good team action movie at all. Dude, Young Guns 2, there, I've solved your problem. At least it's a good movie. Wow. Uh-huh. No, that is a crazy way to end that list. Damn. You know, something I would like to see more of, though?
What?
Some sort of, like, teams dealing in more of a horror context. Mm, I wonder if they're going to make a movie like that someday.
Well, probably, but I can't tell you about any plans for the near future because this week's upcoming horror movie is called Haunt.
Ooh, I assume it's another Halloween Haunt themed one?
Of course it is.
You love these so much.
I know. On Halloween, a group of friends encounter an extreme haunted house that promises to feed on their darkest fears. The night turns deadly as they come to the horrifying realization that some nightmares are real.
Aww. Oh, God. All right. Sure.
Okay,
is this like, does this have pedigree, or did you just love the premise?
Well, I picked it because, obviously, I'm going to feature a movie that has to do with the Halloween Haunt.
Obviously.
But then I found out that Eli Roth co-produced this thing.
Wow.
Not that that really means much of anything. But more importantly, written and directed by Scott Beck and Brian Woods, the duo who co-wrote A Quiet Place.
What?
A movie neither of us saw and don't care about.
No, not at all. So that is a much higher pedigree than I was expecting from this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Weird. Okay. I mean, I don't know that, well, we're probably going to end up watching it. It's about Halloween Haunts. Like, I don't think there's any way to keep you from wanting to see that.
Well, we did a whole month of them last year, so.
I know. And there have been a few more since then, so yeah. Logically speaking, there's a good chance we're going to cover this one, too.
It comes out on Friday the 13th.
Of October?
September.
Oh, September. I didn't know when there was a Friday the 13th this month. This year. Wow, that was bad. But yeah, okay. So definitely something we can check out then. And it's just called Haunt. That's going to make it super easy to remember.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. But in addition to that, we did actually watch a movie this week.
We did. We watched Hobbs and Shaw. If that wasn't obvious from all the discussion earlier. It's the action team up no one asked for, but they made it anyway. Jason Statham and The Rock raid the plot of Mission Impossible 2 and join forces to stop Idris Elba from pulling a Thanos.
Nice.
Thank you.
That is bravo. I'm like, there's that moment right at the movie, at the beginning of the movie, where she, like, stabs her hand into a briefcase, and I'm like, oh, so everybody saw Mission Impossible 2. Gotcha.
Nobody wants to admit it, but it happened.
I know. I love that movie so much.
And you can love it, but don't pretend that it's any good.
Well, no. I mean, it's not. Well, it's not as bad as 3, but I don't think it's high on the list of Mission Impossible movies. In fact, it's second lowest on the list of Mission Impossible movies. 6514 2 3. There you go. That's easy. So much harder to make a list of Fast and the Furious movies, because, like, it's this moment where you're watching this movie, and you're sitting here watching this movie, and you're like, the franchise that, again, started with street racers stealing TV-DVD combos has now reached a point where the world is secretly run by Spectre? Like, they introduced Spectre to the world of Fast and the Furious? Now these are just, I mean, I know they've been spy movies for 3 movies now, but to add in Spectre as a bunch of, like, futurist
genociders. Last movie wasn't really a spy movie. The last movie, and I stand by this statement that I made at the time, the last movie was supposed to be Charlize Theron wanted to hire Xander Cage, and she ended up with Dominic Toretto. Like, that's on her.
It is, but then again, it's, she thought she was in a spy movie. She didn't know she was in a family action film. God, Triple X. I honestly hope they make Triple X 3.
There is a Triple X 3.
Oh,
how
no,
do
sorry.
You not know
sorry.
That?
I keep forgetting about Triple X 2. Even though Ice Cube was in the return of Xander Cage, just so we would remember him. But mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry. I really hope there's a Triple X 4, because come on, that thing was amazing.
I have yet to see Triple X 3.
Well, you have to?
I know, but I need to see it with this one person, and she's not interested. So,
oh, okay. Wait, then why do you have to see it with her?
For me. Because I feel like if and when I do watch it without her, she'll get mad.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, this is a very complicated relationship you're describing, so I'll just let you have that. But wow. I know, it's crazy and needs to be watched by everyone. And it's, this movie is, almost as crazy as Triple X 3.
This movie is weird because they introduce Ryan Reynolds' character in such a way as to make you think that you've just forgotten that he was in one of the other movies, but wasn't.
No, he wasn't. It's an entirely new character to be Hobbs's CIA contact in other movies going forwards.
I mean, I meant to look that up, but I didn't get around to it. So maybe this is us being stupid again?
No, you're right. He literally just did it as a favor to the director who had just made Deadpool 2.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's like, hey, we got this character. Do you want to just come in and do it? And it's like one day of work. And he went and he did one day of work, which is why all of his scenes are inside or just outside the diner, because it was one day of work. And then later they went back and they shot a post-credit scene because test audiences really liked Ryan Reynolds and wanted more Ryan Reynolds in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but it was literally just a one day favor he did for the director, and no one realized how big it was going to be.
Right.
Which, you know, he's very funny.
He is. He is very funny. And he really sells you on the idea that they know each other. But at the same time, because you have never met his character before, you're driving yourself crazy trying
because
to...
Because this is the ninth film in a franchise.
Yeah.
And suddenly a guy is walking onto the scene acting like he's best friends.
Like he's been around for years. And you're like, I don't know who you are. How do I fit you into what I already know about these people in this universe?
Like, yeah, it's breaking my brain trying to understand where you fit into the bizarre jigsaw puzzle that is in the Fast and the Furious franchise.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. God. But I will say this. I really, really, really enjoyed Idris Elba.
Oh, he's great. He's having a great time.
He is so enjoying himself. I mean, he has the problem that, and this is endemic to a lot of modern action films, especially in this franchise, because of the crazy egos of the people starring in it, where, like, he's a villain and he's really impressive, but he can't ever, like, win at anything, because they can't ever have the characters lose at anything.
Well, so, is that an ego thing, or is that more of a problem with the franchise itself?
No, but I think it's born out of the franchise, because it's like, it was in the contracts for Fast and the Furious 7 that no one could ever lose a fight.
How do you build a movie around that?
You saw it. They didn't build a movie around it. They kept having equally good fights, and then something extra would come in and end the fight. Like, that whole movie ends without us ever having the slightest idea who won, like, who is better in a fight, either Jason Statham or The Rock, or Jason Statham or Vin Diesel. They, both of them have major fights that end in draws, because mm-hmm. it was in their contracts that they could never lose a fight.
That's so stupid.
No, it's incredibly stupid. And I'm worried about Jason Statham's ego, because why on
really?
Earth?
Really? You shouldn't be. I can tell you, it's enormous.
There's plenty of it, so you don't have to worry. No, because I'm like, and I'll tell you why I'm worried about it. I got home and I looked up that actress's age and I'm like, why is she not playing his daughter?
But they don't look like they're that far apart.
They are 22 years apart.
But I think I am sold on them being brother and sister. They don't look like there's 22 years difference between them.
No, and I can agree with you that they don't look like there's 22
if they,
years.
There's
apart.
No way they could sell her as his daughter. That will not work.
Okay, well, I see. I would have bought her as his daughter. I wouldn't have a problem accepting that.
Mm-mm.
You right? Visually, you're like, no, Jason Statham doesn't look that old. You
he
just
doesn't
can't
look
accept
that
when he's
old.
52.
He doesn't. Also, he would have had to have had a kid when he was 22.
Which he could have.
But it's unlikely that they would have a good relationship if that were the case. Just
but
what we know from his character. Because he fucking killed a guy!
Well, he's killed a lot of people.
Shot Han in the face!
I know, they don't want us to think about that, which really makes me upset. Like, they really don't want us to think about the fact that he murdered Han.
Yeah.
Because he is still our favorite character in the history of the franchise.
And I don't know about that.
There's somebody you like more than Han?
Oh, I thought you meant Jason Statham.
No, Han, obviously.
Oh, no, definitely Han, yes.
Okay, woo. I'm a little worried there. Like, who's better than Han?
Nobody.
No, Han's the best character ever. Like, and that's the problem. It's like, they want him to be just a hero in the franchise. Not even like an anti-hero. They just want him to be a good guy now. But it's like, but he murdered Han to avenge his brother. A brother who, by the way, is fine and goes all but completely unmentioned in the film.
Ah, it's weird.
It's like, hey, what if Owen's just not in any of our flashbacks? What about that? What if we try that?
Yeah.
You know, you got a brother who's like between the two of you in age. He should have been here for all of these flashbacks.
We just forgot about that or decided it doesn't matter anymore.
But it's so weird. It would have taken no more. It's not like Owen had to be in the movie.
Or maybe
just
he's like a half-brother.
He's
or
not.
Like illegitimate. And they only found out about him later in life.
You know that's not true. Because the mother specifically mentions him.
In like, this
while they're Yeah, well, while they're in prison. She talks about her and Owen, about him and Owen and Hattie.
Oh, I guess I missed that part because it was so loud. I am never going back to see a movie at South Keys ever again.
It is very loud.
The audience is terrible. The sound isn't any good. Yeah. It's a long drive for me.
Okay.
I can drive slightly less amount of time and be at a much better movie theater.
All right. Coliseum next time for sure. 100%.
No, I'm not talking about Coliseum.
Where do you go to the movies?
I go to Landmark in Kanata. It's great.
Oh, Landmark. Right. Oh, so I forgot about Landmark. No, Landmark is nice.
Yeah.
It is nice. But I keep going there on days, accidentally on days when there's a sporting event, which is a nightmare. But that's on me. I just have to check out the, I have to check out the schedule of sporting events, so I miss that. But yeah, I just kind of found it weird that Owen goes completely unmentioned, because it's like he killed Han for Owen, and then Owen's fine, and now he's just not even in the family anymore. And I'm like, poor Luke Evans.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Oh, we love you, Luke Evans. You're the best. You were a great Gaston, and the only good part about that movie.
He's doing other stuff, pursuing other opportunities outside of the Fast and Furious franchise.
Wasn't he just in the adaptation of The Alienist?
Yes, he was. It was okay.
Yeah. He was okay.
And he's in that Adam Sandler movie, Murder Mystery.
Oh, he is? All right. Well, now I'm watching that.
I told you about it.
Yeah, you just didn't tell me Luke Evans was in.
Flat.
No, yeah, I guess
the best word to describe it, which is unfortunate because it could have been really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we're not here to complain further about Murder Mystery.
We're
here to talk about the fact that grenades don't work that way.
Oh my God. Okay. So everything in this movie makes a little weird mechanical noise, sometimes a Transformer noise. But
there are two different parts in the movie that just full on the Transformer sound effect.
He jams a pin back into a grenade before it explodes.
And we hear it power down.
It makes a little wind down noise. I'm like, okay, there's so much wrong with that.
First off, grenades don't take 15 seconds to go off. Second, when you pull out a pin out of a grenade and the paddle comes out, you just set off a fuse that's actually a physical fuse that's burning down. Mm-hmm. Putting the paddle back down and putting the pin in doesn't change the fact that there is a fuse burning down.
Yeah.
To be fair, as was pointed out by the movie Hard Target, theoretically you could unscrew the top of that grenade and pull the fuse out.
Right.
But that's not what he does.
You don't have that kind of time. No.
He puts the pin back in.
Yeah. I mean, like he's fine, disarming a fine. Bomb. I don't care. But at the same time, not how grenades work. And I'm worried someone's going to see that and think that they can try it out.
Yeah, do not try that.
I mean, seriously. That's on them, but still.
I know. Yeah. But then again, you know what? They pulled that movie. What was that movie called? The Program? When a bunch of people got run over by cars. Oh. So.
Stupid.
Yeah, don't lie down in the middle of the road at night, people. You're going to get crushed by a car.
Just don't take any cues from movies. How about that?
Whatever you see in a movie isn't real, don't try it. There.
Yeah.
We've solved your problem. But yeah, like seriously, the grenade thing was ludicrous. I mean, it's far from the most ludicrous thing in the movie.
He has a transformer for a motorcycle.
Yeah, he has a transformer gyro-stabilized motorcycle. That can basically do whatever it wants.
And that makes the Transformer noise.
Yeah, makes the Transformer noise, like, all the time.
All the time. Non-stop. Yeah,
it's just constantly like, choo-choo-choo-choo. Like, like, I know visually
and
it looks...
Yeah, it's like self-propelled.
Oh, God, yeah. And it can fall, like, he's mind-controlling
it. Magic. It's magic. He has a magic motorcycle.
Yeah, he has a magic motorcycle that always knows what he wants.
Heat Seeker? Was that the name of that motorcycle?
Heat Vision.
Heat Vision, right.
From Heat Vision and Jack,
Vision and Jack, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, it can just do whatever the plot requires it to.
Yeah, which, again, it's fine.
We just kind of have to accept that. I know how movies work. I've seen movies, but still, it's pretty ridiculous,
The time where it just really stretched my willing suspension of disbelief, and it's in the trailer, is when Dwayne Johnson... He's trying to hold onto a helicopter and prevent it from flying away.
Oh no, the winch is broken. I'll use my muscles to stop this helicopter.
I got big guns. They'll take care of this problem.
What the hell was that?
Like, come on.
You know, I want to be in favor of it. I want to give you a pass movie, but come on.
There's another movie.
Captain America does it. And Captain America literally does that exact thing.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, in, not Winter Soldier, Civil War. But mm-hmm. he's Captain America. He's a literal Superman.
But Dwayne Johnson's got big guns, way bigger than Captain America's.
I love that rationale.
So it makes more sense. Anyway, the point is, that was the point of the movie. Everything else up to that point, I'm on board. But then you get to this helicopter stunt. I'm like, I don't know about this one.
Oh, God. By the way, one of my favorite things in the movie is that, is the timeline, right? Where
78 hours. How long does she have?
I think it's 72 hours.
It's around three days.
Yeah, it's around 3 days.
This movie happens over way more than just 3 days.
Oh, I know. They spend so much time, because they don't even find her for a full day after she's been infected. So that's 24 hours right there.
Right. And then they fly
so much happens.
Moscow. Oh, no, not Moscow. Somewhere in Russia to Samoa. I'm like, that's a really long flight.
You gotta remember, first, they have to take a plane from London on a commercial airline. So, I mean, maybe it's a direct flight, who knows? They have to go, they have to meet his contact somewhere in Russia, they have to travel to the middle of nowhere in Russia to go do the thing, they have to have their whole adventure underneath the facility.
It's like when you're playing Carmen Sandiego, and then you have to sleep so the clock starts ticking. It's like, that's how I felt.
Watching it's crazy. Like,
way more time is passing than you think.
Oh, no, totally. That's but then, and as you say, now they're in the middle of nowhere in a broken truck, and they have to get from there to an airport so Kevin Hart, who's in this movie, so that Kevin Hart can get them on a plane to Samoa, which is an incredibly long flight from Russia. Oh, and then you get the beautiful thing, because then they have a whole day, pretty
preparing
much,
for Idris Elba to attack.
Yeah, they have like 18 hours preparing for Idris Elba to attack. So you take the first day between them finding her, right, and then 18 hours at the end, we've already accounted for 42 of their 72 hours. That means the entire rest of the film, including two major international flights, has to have all happened in 30 hours. There's no way.
I mean, I know for a fact that it takes approximately 30 hours to fly from the Western Pacific to North America.
Yeah, and let's face it, I mean, yeah, they were in Europe. I mean,
they were already on the other side, but still.
Still, that's an incredibly
Pacific is a
long
really flight. Big ocean. It's a really long way.
Yeah, Samoa is the middle of nowhere. Oh, God. But you want to talk about time nonsense. So we're literally told Idris Elba is going to attack at the moment of sunup. So he has the sun at his back and mm-hmm. they're at their most tired. Yeah. So, and we are told that guns are going to be turned off For six minutes.
That's the world's longest 6 minutes.
Because, there's that. But what I love about it is the guns go, so they attack and it's dark. It is really dark for break of dawn. And then.
No, they say he attacks before dawn.
Yeah, right. Just before dawn. Yeah, because you're right. They say he's going to attack before dawn.
Because it's dark and you're fucking tired. And then the sun rises.
The sun
and
is
going to
come
out
in your eyes. Yeah. Right. You're right. And when his trucks roll up, it is dark. Mm-hmm. So they start a fist fight, and about 1 minute into that fist fight, it is noon.
That's a bit of a stretch, but there's no way this all takes place in 6 minutes, so clearly her math was off, and those guns are turned off a lot longer than six minutes.
I would
minutes.
Say about 4 hours.
She has
30 minutes to live.
She has 3 minutes to live, so it's at least 30 minutes.
That's
or
true.
Maybe it's more like 28 because the guns turn back on, but.
They turn back on. Actually, yeah, you're right, because she's going to turn off the, when she turns off the guns, there is...
Right, you can turn off guns in this movie.
Oh yeah, we forgot to mention that part. Guns have off remote off switches. That's actually important to the plot.
Yeah, and well, it's fine. It's fine.
Nobody's complaining. But yeah, she turns it off right at the start of the fight. She says the guns are going to be off for about 6 minutes. And we have on the clock, because we see her timer, it's like 28 minutes left. And the guns turn back on when there's 4 minutes left on the timer. Mm-hmm. So I guess those guns were off for way longer.
Way more than 6 minutes. I mean, it benefited everybody. That's great.
Well, what I think the craziest part, though, is that apparently it turns off the helicopter's guns, too.
Well, because they're all mechanical. They're all...
They're all linked to the same biochip stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
But I don't know why the helicopter would need you to be wearing specific gloves to operate it.
Because it's just how this weird organization operates. It's just how...
This they... ridiculous organization operates.
Yeah.
So, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Is Luke Hobbs the worst dad in the world?
I don't think so. I think he's a pretty good dad when he's around.
But she has no idea who her mother is.
No.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but not
did
we.
She doesn't, no. But she doesn't even know her mother's name.
Yeah.
There is a question mark on the family tree. She's a 13-year-old girl. She doesn't even know her mother's name. That's weird.
Maybe he doesn't know. She could be adopted.
She's definitely not adopted.
You don't know that, and neither do I.
No, and I'll tell you how I know, because they recast the girl in the previous film, in 7, I guess. They had a daughter who was obviously closer to African looks, suggesting that she had a black mother and Dwayne The Rock Johnson for a father. Mm-hmm. And this time she's been recast. By the way, it's 2 movies later and she's the exact same age. She has not aged at all. That's why they had to recast. And she looks a ton more like him.
Mm-hmm.
They've gone with an actress meant to heighten the Pacific Islander heritage, suggesting she's not adopted.
He could still adopted her from...
He could have.
Yeah.
I'm just saying he didn't.
You don't know that for sure.
No,
and
I don't know that for sure.
Yeah, I don't think that it really matters.
And I just think it's weird for to have a family tree to have question mark where the mother is. Like, it costs the filmmakers nothing. Whatever they want to do with the wife, wife or mother later, it costs them nothing to write a name on a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And by putting in question marks, it kind of makes him look like a bad father.
I'm sure he has his reasons for disclosing this information to her.
Well, and the crazy part is the name doesn't even commit you to anything, because later you could say she was also a spy and that was just a code and she had lied to me her whole life and that was what I thought her name was, but she was really someone completely different. And now she's the person running the evil organization.
Right. And that's why I don't talk about her, and that's why you don't know who your mom is.
Well, yeah, but you at least have a fake name to have given your daughter. Although, God, that would be hilarious if that Sam's mother was the head of the evil organization.
So who do you think is the head? Like, you floated Ryan Reynolds as the head of the evil organization.
Because, I swear to God, in the mess of voices they were using, the voice codes, I swear to God, Ryan Reynolds was in there.
Okay, so this evil organization, okay, so let's back up. Idris Elba... Yeah. has been enhanced. He's an enhanced human. He's like the next evolution in humanity.
Which is a weird way to say he's just a cyborg. He's just got a lot of metal parts.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
And so it's this organization called Edeon that sort of had rebuilt him, made him stronger and faster. It cost significantly more than $6 million.
I would hope.
And he has a bone to pick with Jason Statham. We'll get into that later. So this evil organization is run by a guy you never meet, and they only communicate over a phone line, and his voice, then it's the leader's voice always modulates.
Yeah.
So all we know about this person at the end of the movie is that he knows Hobbs. He knows
Dwayne
Johnson's character. There's a history there. It's a surprise to Dwayne Johnson.
Dwayne Johnson has no idea who this character is. Yeah.
So that's like Idris Elba's deal. So he got shot by Jason Statham back in the day.
Yep.
Jason Statham thought he'd killed him, but he essentially got reborn by this Edeon organization that initially wanted to bring Jason Statham on board, and he told them no. rightfully so. And Idris Elba now carries this big chip on his shoulder.
Yeah.
And then he's told in the movie that Edeon still wants to recruit Jason Statham and now also Dwayne Johnson because they're very impressed with Dwayne Johnson.
They're a badass team.
And Idris Elba still, he's like, I don't think that's such a good idea.
I know those both these guys. I've been chasing them around London and Russia. I don't think they're like, you know, team players.
Yeah, I don't think they're the right kind of guys you want for our vision of humanity. By which he means mercenaries, people who can be bought and sold.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the whole deal with Idris Elba and why he's Black Superman. Which is how he refers to himself.
Yes. Which he can't call himself what he is, Black Captain America. Or Black Commander Steel, I guess? Because those are, you know, because they're Marvel characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so he doesn't want to be associated with it. I completely get that legally. Makes complete sense to me. But yes, it's a fun, like, it's a fun organization, and I like they have this base, right? I like they have this base in an old disused nuclear facility. Like, I love his battle armor. I love their, you know, their white rooms full of tech. I love all of the James Bond stuff in this movie, because the only way to describe most of what's the aesthetic of this movie is just a bunch of James Bond stuff with the villains. And I really liked all of that stuff, but at the same time, like, you're not going to end this movie by at least telling me what's going on with those guys?
No, we got to wait to find out.
Oh, making me wait a whole movie just to find out what's going on with those guys seems a bit much to me.
So my prediction, I think that it's an AI. We've got like a Han Zola thing going on.
Yeah, Emile Zola.
Emile Zola, sorry.
Yeah,
I got confused because there's a Die Hard reference.
Yes, there's a Die Hard reference in the movie.
In the movie.
They get fake funny, IDs. Actually.
And Jason Statham's last name is Gruber.
Yeah.
And I just watched some Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and he's really hung up on Die Hard, so I've got like, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was the perfect
Hans
time.
Gruber stuck in my head.
Oh, totally.
Emile Zola, there we go.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it could be an AI. It absolutely could be an AI. That's a really good theory. I mean, the thing is, I was taken by what I swore was Ryan Reynolds' voice in there. But I could have misheard that. It's happened before. And if that's the case, maybe it's Hobbs's ex-wife.
Right, the mother of his child.
Yeah, who is a spy and he thought was dead. Because it turns out she was a spy and evil and he thinks she's dead. But then boom. Oh no, she's actually the head of this evil organization.
Yeah, but then you're getting into like Alias territory.
You are. And I think that's the kind of road this series is going down.
It's just a little preposterous.
Oh no, absolutely. What about this franchise doesn't suggest a willingness to become massively overbloated?
That's true.
Like, that's the brand of this franchise. Just ridiculous sequel bloat. The last movie had a, what do you call it? They attacked a submarine.
I know. And fire apparently doesn't go under things.
I've heard that.
It can't go through doors. It's not a ghost.
Oh my God. I rewatched 8 before I watched this just to like get my head straight for where they were as a franchise.
Uh-huh.
And I'm glad I did, because that is the craziest movie.
Oh, that movie is insane. It's so ridiculous.
Oh God, yeah. No, it is such madness, and I'm so glad I rewatched it, because wow.
I remember really enjoying number 5.
5 is great.
I think I need to rewatch 6.
6 is still my favorite.
I don't remember what happens in 7.
No. 6 is my favorite because I think it had some of the best Han stuff in it.
Well, he dies at the end of... Oh, no,
he dies, yeah. Yeah, he dies at the end. You're remembering
the
wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, 7 is the one that's easy to forget because it's the Jason Statham one, and then there's a warlord, and they want God's Eye, like all of that stuff. The tech to see everybody. Yeah.
I do not remember any of that.
Okay. Yeah. Might not have made the best impression on you. It's the one with the weird, uncanny valley Paul Walker. There you go.
Well, only because he died.
Yeah, no, but I'm just saying, if you want to remember something about it, that's the big takeaway, was they had the uncanny valley Paul Walker.
No, that didn't bother me at all.
Okay. Well, that's good. Some people found it weird, but I'm glad you're one of the ones.
No, when I uncanny valley really hard, it's like Alita. It's like Battle Angel Alita stuff. Like, that's fucking weird.
Yeah, and upsetting to look at for too long. You know, you're totally right. It is upsetting to look too long at that character.
Which is why I haven't actually seen the movie.
No, just me too. Just watching the trailers, I'm like,
No, I'm not going to pay money to see that. Are you kidding me?
It'll make a streaming service and we'll watch it then. It's just, like, you know, we didn't, like, I know what you were going for, James Cameron, but we don't actually need her to have anime face. It's fine.
Yeah.
Like, just, we would accept it.
But anyway.
You know, the sad part is I was about to compare it and say it worked fine in Ghost in the Shell. But of course it did not work fine in Ghost in the Shell. That would be a very bad description of what happened in Ghost in the
Shell. That movie's got other problems, much bigger ones.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. But yeah, no, this is, that's the thing. I'm really sad because this is directed by David Leitch, who's the other guy. So there's Chad Stahelski and David Leitch, right? And they're the guys who made John Wick. And I am sad, like, don't get me wrong, I love John Wick 2 and 3 the most, but I am sad that the guy who left to go and do, like, the bigger budget giant Hollywood action movies, like Deadpool 2 and this, didn't get to take the good stuntmen and cameramen with him.
No, I think he has a good stuntman, and he probably has a good cameraman. We just don't know because a second unit director sucks balls for a living. So, which is fine. If he wants to suck balls for a living, that's his choice.
That's his choice.
But suck balls or be a really good second unit director. Don't do both.
Oh, God. Damn, this got real. Oh.
I'm just saying, put the fucking camera down. The stunt coordinator is there for a reason.
They have put in so much work.
I know, and she is so fucking good.
Her
fights are amazing.
And they don't let you see any of it.
Yeah.
No, I was so frustrated. It's so frustrating. Yeah, no, Vanessa Kirby's great in this. We haven't talked enough about her, because she is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she does the action so well, all the character stuff works, it's a great performance, I liked her with The Rock, I liked her with Jason Statham, like, such a good character, so great in the movie, and I wish I could have seen more of her awesome fighting, because it was clear that she was doing awesome fighting.
Yeah, no, she was doing a great job.
Yeah.
I just feel, so with her and Jason Statham, though, the movie needed one more flashback to them as kids. You can't have two, you really need three to kind of round it out.
Yeah, and it should have come right at the end.
Yeah, they needed one more.
That would have been good. You're totally right. Ugh. Still. And I gotta say, right in there, you guys, they kill off the scientist who was gonna help her, and then did in fact help her.
Yeah, that was too bad. But aww, the worst poor guy.
The thing that, I know, I was very sad for that guy, but what I was saddened even more by was the fact that it's like, they made no effort to rescue him.
No, they just left that guy behind. I mean, he's going to town with that flamethrower.
He's going to town with the flamethrower, and they're like, let's use his distraction to cover our escape, leaving him to die.
I know.
Like, you guys are the heroes, right?
No, but they're not, because Jason Statham killed Han.
That's true.
Circling back to this point.
No, you're absolutely right. The film wants to think of them as heroes, but, you know, they certainly did leave that guy to die. Because the thing is, had he started flaming stuff and then Idris Elba killed him right away, and then...
That would have been one thing.
That would have been one thing. But no, like, he's still causing a distraction while they're busy driving out of the building. And I honestly thought, so they can, like, spin around and go get that guy who's allowing them to escape?
Right? Yeah.
And the answer is no, they're not.
I know. Oh, such a
he's
bummer.
He's dead. Thanks, guys. Thanks, team.
I think, okay, so I really enjoyed the movie. One thing, though, that was a little bit much for me, apart from the helicopter stunt, was all the family stuff.
But like, I mean, it's part of the Fast and the Furious franchise.
But, like, you don't really need to harp on it as much. Like, if you're a Spy Kids movie, that's great.
Absolutely. That's the whole point of that franchise.
You're not a Spy Kids movie.
Nope, you're supposed to be.
And you made your point about family, like, in about six or seven other films. You don't need it. In this one, you can just cram your movie full of dick jokes and hilarious names, and I'm good to go.
This really is the lowest common denominator of films. The jokes in this movie are just like the absolute bottom of the barrel.
In thick and fast.
Yes, they are.
Oh man.
You do not get any respite from the terrible dick jokes in this movie. Oh, no, it's ridiculous. It's likable, but it is ridiculous. And as long as you go in understanding that this is the most ludicrous time you'll have in the movies.
Yeah.
This year. Like, I don't think there's going to be a dumber fun movie this year. Like, that moment at the end of the movie where it's like,
well, there's still Angel Has Fallen. I think that'll probably not Angels. As dumb.
Not as dumb, but probably as fun and definitely more deadly stabbings.
I certainly hope so.
I'll have to redo that video where I counted up who stabs more people, Michael Myers or Mike Banning. You might be surprised by the results. I'm not going to tell it here. Go watch the video. But anyway, but when I was watching this movie, it's like, there's a moment where just, like, there's no reason you couldn't have made a better movie here, but it's like, they just like, no, we just have to make enough movie to go out and shoot it, and I get that. But it's like, every now and then, I am blown away by how little they think of their audience, which is that at the end fight with Idris Elba, they actually have the two characters say to each other,
oh God,
if we learn to team up, then we can defeat him. Yes, that's been the point of the whole movie.
It hurts.
You don't have to say that out loud. That has been the point of every scene in the movie. That if you guys team up, you do better.
See, there's such a thing as nonverbal communication.
I know, just have them give each other a look.
Film is a visual medium. I think you might capitalize on that for just a moment. Just one teeny tiny moment.
Because all that happens is, he's punching Jason Statham. The Rock hits him in the back, like, damaging him. Have them give each other a look. No, but they sit in a corner for 30 seconds.
Strategy.
And talk about how they're going to take him down, because it's better when we team up.
Oh, Christ.
I've been watching the rest of the movie. Okay? I saw the whole movie. You don't have to tell me that.
Also, I've seen Spy Kids.
Okay, well, yes.
I get it. Better together. Come on.
Oh, my God. Okay, so, I mean, we did like the movie. I want to make
that
clear. We did.
Yes. No, it was a fun time.
But do we at the same time wish that, like, all action movies could be better movies, like your, you know, John Wicks and such? Sure. I think we believe that. But, you know, as an entry in this ludicrous franchise, it absolutely lives up to the reputation of the franchise. And it is a far more coherent film than the last two Fast and the Furious movies.
I'll say yes, because I don't remember the last two Fast and the Furious movies.
That's fair. That
which
is a fair
reaction. Kind of makes my point for me and for you.
Exactly. I know Fate is, I know, again, it's great that it was called Fate of the Furious, but it's like, no, we're just calling it Fast and Furious 8. We don't want people to be confused.
But like, it bums me out though, because he had Fate of the Furious, and like everyone's like, I was really looking forward to Fine, like just F9.
I know, Fine. Fine. Fine and Furious?
Fine and Furious, ooh.
Actually, why aren't they not calling it Fine and
right?
Furious?
And then you're like really setting the stage, like you can really kick it up a notch, like really like take that full step into James Bond territory that you so desperately want to take.
Well, they Fine added Spectre in this franchise, so. Why not just admit that you're the new James Bond? Vin Diesel, The Rock, Jason Statham.
All three of you combined. Whatever. It's a shared mantle.
All right. So on the upside, everyone's got to go watch our video. And if we haven't posted it yet, we'll post it presently. About how they can bring Han back.
Oh, yes.
In the ninth movie. And that is where we can get some closure on that. Since obviously there's going to be a ninth movie. This thing made plenty of money. There'll be a Hobbs and Shaw. I don't care if Han comes back in Hobbs and Shaw 2 or Fine and Furious, but bring him back. Bring him back. We've got a video telling you how to bring him back. Bring back Han. Mm-hmm. Hashtag bring back Han. All right. My final thought of the movie, and then you can give your final thought, is my favorite thing in the movie is we're told that there's going to be a giant storm coming in at the north part of the island.
Yes.
So they can always leave the helicopter there. And then so they drive up to the north part of the island, and there's no storm? And I'm like, didn't they tell us there was going to be a storm? No, wait. But they're driving along the top of the cliffs, right? And it's like, and I'm like, where's the storm? We were promised a big storm in this scene. And then they do all the thing, and then they all go falling off the cliff, and they're all fine. But as they land at the bottom, there is a giant thunderstorm going on.
No, they drive into the storm with the helicopter.
But which makes me think that, like, that cliff was so high that the thunderstorm was actually below the top of the cliff.
It's possible.
And they, like, fall into the fire, the thunderstorm.
I have been in places where you get an inversion like that.
So there you go. That is what I believe happened. And it leads to my favorite thing in the, my entire favorite thing in the movie, which is, so he has been doing the whole end fight shirtless, right? The Rock, I mean, obviously. Jason Statham is a 52-year-old man. He's not taking off his shirt.
No, the Rock puts his shirt back on.
That's what I'm about to say. Oh. He spent the whole final fight shirtless, the whole big combat, and then out of nowhere, during the Chuck chase, he puts a shirt on. And I'm like, why is he putting a shirt on? And then I see that the final fight is like on a sound stage in Montreal in the dead of winter. And it's like, I'm going to be spending the next 2 weeks punching Idris Elba while getting fake rained on in this Montreal soundstage. I'm going to be wearing a shirt for that.
Yeah, makes sense.
No, and I just love that he puts on a shirt during a truck chase just for that reason. It made me unbearably happy.
Well, he's heading into a rainstorm.
It makes perfect sense. All right.
You want to wear a shirt?
Totally. I mean, it's almost no shirt, but yes. So what was your final thought on the film?
I liked it. I had a good time. It took me a while to get over how bad the audience was. I'll be honest with you. It really did detract from my enjoyment of the movie. It was a lot of fun. And it is like, we're sort of coming back now to this era of like really quippy action heroes. A lot of one-liners, a lot of throwaway lines. And I don't know how I feel about it. Like, it's hilarious and fun, but it's like, you don't always need to be talking.
No, and they are always talking.
Always, yes.
They don't shut up for a second. You're right. You really don't need to. And that's, I think, the lesson we learned from John Wick is like, no, you can just shoot people. It's fine.
Yeah, I guess it just depends on the kind of movie you're going to see, so.
Absolutely. But even, like, you can do a big action movie like this without having constant, you know, Carlton Cuse-style quipping.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to have that.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Jeffrey Bowman, Carlton Cuse.
I did love Dwayne Johnson's wardrobe. It was hilarious.
It was.
And then at the end of the movie where they're wearing the same thing is also very funny. I don't know if anyone actually noticed.
I don't know. No, I noticed that they're both wearing the exact same tracksuit.
Yes.
Such a weird choice.
No,
it's funny because don't you understand, at the beginning of the movie, they were shown that they had led completely different lives in this parallel split screen thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the end of the movie, they're wearing the same tracksuit.
But not so parallel because they do the same thing at the beginning of the movie. It was a fun split screen.
No, it was, because they're living the exact same life in their completely different ways.
Yes, and they drive the shit out of that McLaren, and it was awesome.
He loves that car so much. Oh, man, did they get the most out of that car. Although there's a moment where he tells his sister to get into the car, and Dwayne is like, I'm getting in, too. I'm like, I don't think you fit in that car.
No, that was his tight squeeze.
I don't think, even if Vanessa Kirby wasn't there, I don't think you could get in that car with Jason Statham.
It just wasn't built for a man of your stature.
It's just not. All right, so I guess that's that. Do you have any narcissism you would like to watch?
We should have new episodes of Chicks and Dicks and Turn with Crime coming at you soon.
Yay!
Keep an ear open for those.
You know what? Thumbs up. Normally I would make some kind of a comment there, but no, thumbs up. Keep an ear open, people. For me, as you know, constant new content at Hidden Object Guru YouTube channel. Profiling Criminal Minds, the world's number one Criminal Minds podcast.
The world's only Criminal Minds
podcast. Actually, there were two others.
Really?
Yeah, there were two others that tried to be Criminal Minds podcasts and failed. So we are not the only. We're just the most successful Criminal Minds podcast.
There was another True North Crime. Did I tell you this story?
You told me that. Yes.
Yeah. I think they've seemed to have disappeared.
Thank God. Hurting your brand viability.
What a bunch of dicks. Seriously. Rename your show. We were here first.
But anyway, so yeah, and what I loved about the Criminal Minds podcast was one of them just seems to have petered out, and the other one closed up shop in protest when Thomas Gibson wasn't on the show anymore.
And that was like a really long time ago.
I know. It was 4 years ago. But that is why they did it. I'm like, that is the ethical choice. I didn't do that. I'm not ethical.
And
but
there
I
you're just your flogging choice. That horse.
Damn.
Stop! He's already dead.
Poor Estonian dwarf. All right. So yes, is there any other way to get in touch with us?
You can visit the AVODs blog at theavod.com. You can leave us a comment there and tell us about how much you enjoyed Hobbs and Shaw. You can send us an email at theavod@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and if you're listening on an app, be sure to leave us a 5-star review.
And I encourage you to do all of those things. So until next time, I've been Count Vargelon.
I've been DM.
Thanks for watching and have yourselves a great evening.
Good night.